From the sparrows we see drinking the water that collects on our fire escapes to the cardinals and hawks of Central Park, we can honestly say New York City is for the birds. Leslie Day came to know the natural world of the city in an unusual way. For almost 40 years, she was a resident of the 79th Street Boat Basin, and she leads nature tours in many of the city's parks. She's the author of a new field guide to the neighborhood birds of New York City. Beth Bergman took the photos for that field guide, and both of them are here now to answer your questions about the birds of New York City on today's Please Explain. The book is published by Johns Hopkins University Press. And if you, members of our audience, would like to join in the discussion, our phone number is 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter. You can tweet us for this discussion of birds at Leonard Lopate. Leslie, what was living in a houseboat on 79th Street like? Did it feel like you were in a typical New York neighborhood?
Well, the Boat Basin for many years was a floating small town. And so it was a way to be close to nature but still connected to Manhattan. And I started noticing birds there. Particularly one bird flew up to me when I was walking our two dogs around the ball field there. I always had a pocket full of bird seed that my neighbor had given me. His old parrot Bobo didn't eat that much anymore. So I'd throw the seed out. And one day this beautiful little bird shows up with a red crest and a red beak. She followed me for 3 years.
She followed you?
Every time I walked the dog, she'd be out there. In the morning, she'd be sitting on the railing calling to me. Once I was teaching at the 92nd Street Y, and I had come home during a blizzard, and I was walking around the traffic circle at 79th Street, and out of the snow, she flew to me. And after a while, I had to know what kind of bird she was, so I borrowed a field guide to birds from a friend, and I identified her as a female cardinal. And then eventually, after 3 years, a male showed up. She took off with him, and I never saw her again.
Yeah, there are lots of cardinals around the city. Is New York particularly attractive to cardinals? I have some that come into my backyard in Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn, yeah. Cardinals are very common in the Northeast now.
They were only in St. Louis. What did I know?
There's a lot for them to eat because there are berries and seeds throughout the year, and there are a lot of insects to feed their young.
Beth, aren't you a photographer at the Metropolitan Opera?
That's correct.
You hear lots of bird-like trills there, but how much of a difference is there between photographing a performance and photographing birds? In some ways, you have to catch both in motion, don't you?
That's correct. There are several differences. One, in the theater situation, it can be very dark, but photographing birds is out of doors. The reflex needed to get the definitive moment is the same, and the necessity to wear comfortable shoes is also the same.
Now, if you're doing a field guide, you have to find all the different birds that are being discussed. So how do you know where to go to photograph for them?
Okay, the pictures in the book come partially from my archives that date back to about 1974. You can't really know. You just have to go out and stop, look, and listen. But then you do see patterns. If you want to see the waterfowl, you're going to go to a lake or the reservoir.
Or to the boat basin that Leslie
correct.
Used to live in?
That's where we met.
That's where we met. If you want to see the small birds, you look for wooded areas. If you want to see the common birds, sparrows, robins, starlings, grackles, just walk the streets. Look under the air conditioners.
And look out your window.
Because they're building nests all along
yes.
buildings, in many cases because buildings are like rock formations
That's
in
right.
their minds.
And you have your rock pigeons who are used to nesting on rocks and on ledges. And we also have peregrine falcons. There are more peregrine falcons in New York City than any other urban area in the world.
Because they think that we're like cliffs?
Yeah, we give them all these ledges, these stone ledges to nest on.
We have received a few photos from our listeners of birds that they've seen around the city. Do you have any tips for photographing birds?
Oh, yes. First, you have to have respect for the subject. If you have a camera, that doesn't mean that you can go within a bird's comfort zone. Watch the bird first, watch what it's doing, and then you need whatever equipment is comfortable for you. And comfortable means comfortable in the hand and also comfortable in the pocketbook. Some equipment is very expensive. But think first, watch, and then try for a picture.
On your blog, the Beth Lens, you keep dialogue captions under some of your photos, and I like this one for the Green Heron series. Quote, "At the mulberry tree, when there is movement, something has arrived. No clear view. Wait a bit. Oh, joy, the green heron. Now, if I only can get a clear view."
Or have X-ray vision. It's very hard. Sometimes you have to look through the bushes, and you have to be very, very patient. And the difference with nature is you can be patient, but with a stage production, it happens in a second. There's no second chance.
Then there are other birds that, like owls, are they easy to spot?
They're usually very well hidden, camouflaged, but they'll stay put for a while. But they are so camouflaged that, oh, Lord, is that an owl or is that the bark of a tree? Is that an owl or are those leaves? And then when you see them, it takes your breath away.
My guests are Beth Bergman, who provided the photographs for the field guide to the Neighborhood Birds of New York City, and Leslie Day, who wrote the book, which is published by Johns Hopkins University Press. We invite your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter. My handle is at Leonard Lopate. This is the Leonard Lopate Show on WNYC. And a caller called in to ask, didn't state on the line, unfortunately, is there a bird reserve in the park near Macy's? This person is interested in identifying one 4-inch round olive-colored bird that he or she finds there.
So tiny, 4 inches. I mean,
what size?
Well, I wish the caller had stayed on the line. But are there certain places where birds tend to congregate throughout the city?
Yeah, and it has to do with also with the season and the season of migration. And so from late March through May, you get literally millions of birds streaming through New York City. We sit under the Atlantic Flyway, which is the route they take from South and Central America up to their northern breeding grounds in the Northeast and New England and even up into Canada. And they're flying over and they're tired, they're hungry, they're thirsty, and they see all our parks because we're a very green city. And we have so many street trees, millions of trees, and backyards. And down they come to rest and feed. And some of them stay through the summer and then leave again in the autumn.
And some stay throughout the whole year.
Some stay throughout the whole year. They're
so
year-round
birds.
So it's
the kind of breed of the bird?
It has to do with what they eat. And so the reason birds don't stay here in the winter is because they don't have access to food. So if they feed on invertebrates, on bugs, they need to go south. If they feed on nectar, like hummingbirds, they need to go south.
But I have seen ducks and swans in Prospect Park in the middle of winter.
That's right.
Are there different kinds of birds attracted to different places, Fort Tryon, as opposed to Prospect Park or Central
Park? Often birds will come back to where they nested the year before, and they might even use the same nest. But they are attracted to the habitat because the habitat offers them a place to nest, a certain type of food. So the shorebirds will keep coming back. We have hundreds of miles of coastline around New York City.
One of my producers talks about having seen a family of ducks in the courtyard to the Union Theological Seminary at 121st Street. I don't know whether they were religious birds or not.
Oh, that's amazing. I mean, the female mallard duck will nest almost anywhere. I mean, we used to have ducks nesting on top of our boats, but eventually they have to lead their kids to water.
Well, let's take a couple of calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. Daniel from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. I was at Central Park one Sunday afternoon, and a falcon came down from the tree with a sparrow. He caught the sparrow down. He started eating it. He came to the ground, and he started eating the sparrow. And the people that were in the area surrounded the falcon, taking pictures. They were so close to the bird, it was incredible how they come so close to the bird eating with the camera.
I'm glad you brought this up. It most likely was a red-tailed hawk, and it most likely was a young red-tailed hawk. They're very common in the city. There are at least 8 nests in Manhattan alone, over 40 nests throughout the 5 boroughs. And the young birds are used to people, right, Beth? I mean, they're used to being photographed.
It can be potentially dangerous because the babies don't understand. These are human beings. You can get hurt. And the humans don't understand that those babies will run at you to fly, but you can be hurt by the talons.
There's a photo in the book of a red-tailed hawk in Riverside Park doing something called anting. What's that?
They lie down on the ground, and the ants will eat any parasites that are in their wings. It's a way to stay clean, and it's not just hawks. But the hawk is so big that the sight of that takes your breath away. All birds, and even young birds.
The ants release a formic acid, which will kill the parasites. And so
this is a symbiotic relationship they have with insects to get rid of insects.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. I guess that probably is something that goes back maybe a million years or so.
It's an evolutionary adaptation that works really well.
Jonathan from Englewood, New Jersey, hi, you're on the air.
Well, thank you. I'm familiar with Beth's wonderful bird photographs and her really significant opera photographs, but I wanted to know, in bird photography, are you committed to one or two lenses when you go out, and have you ever tried a smaller format camera than a DSLR?
Could you do this with your phone, for example?
No. If I'm doing birds, I use proper single-lens reflex with a powerful lens. And it's not the equipment that I use in the opera house. Everybody makes choices. If I'm going to run over the hills and over the rocks, I can't carry a tripod. That's just my build. I can't carry that weight. So I have to have something that's portable and that reacts very fast.
Now, you also have to know bird sounds, don't you?
Absolutely. It's hear, stop, look.
There are some...
Especially in the summer when there's so many leaves. And you can't see them in the trees.
Some sounds that I associate with the summer here in New York, the morning dove, for example. Why do we have so many morning doves all throughout the city?
They do really well. They're seed eaters. They also will nest on ledges and on top of fuse boxes. And they are terrific parents, as are the pigeons. They mate for life. Both parents take care of the babies.
And I always was confused whether they were morning doves because I only hear them in the morning or because their sound sounds like they are mourning the dead.
It's right. M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G.
Yeah, mourning the dead.
So it's that sad sound.
Yeah, it's a sad. A lot of people think they're owls because they sound like, ooh. Then you realize, well, it's during the day and they're not really calling at night.
And different birds make calls at different parts of the day? A lot of birds, of course, early in the morning.
Owls are not active during the day, usually. Most owl species are active at night. They're nocturnal.
But I would assume that when you're out looking for birds, that the morning would be the best because that's when I hear most of the bird sounds.
It varies. And it's
during
the spring and the summer, it's the male birds that are singing because they're singing for a mate. But you might hear birds any time of day and... Not every bird sings a single song. Blue jays imitate other birds. Sometimes you hear a hawk. Oh, boy, where's the hawk? Where's the hawk? Oh, it's the blue jay.
The mockingbird.
Then if you hear a doorman's whistle or a Volkswagen horn or a bus going in reverse and it's up a tree, it's the mockingbird.
My guests are Leslie Day, author of Field Guide to the Neighborhood Birds of New York City, and photographer Beth Bergman, who supplied the photographs for the book. There's also illustrations by Trudy Smoke, and the book is published by Johns Hopkins. We will continue our conversation. Take your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. We'll be back right after this. And we are back with Leslie Day, author of Field Guide to the Neighborhood Birds of New York City. It's published by Johns Hopkins. Also with us is Beth Bergman, who supplied the photographs for the book, these fabulous photographs for the book. There are some wonderful illustrations as well by Trudy Smoke. And we are inviting your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Let's go to Ian in Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling about some birds that live in my neighborhood. I'm in Dimmitt Park in Brooklyn. They've nested on in one tree on one block. These sort of tropical-looking, bright green birds. The urban legend is that they fell off of the side of some shipping container for pet parakeets or something. But I wanted to know whether your guests had heard about these birds or knew where they came from or anything like that.
They are in our book, and it's the monk or Quaker parakeets. They're the only parrots that live in New York City. It is an urban myth. We're not sure how they ended up here. But
could they have just escaped from somebody's home?
They could have escaped because they are sold through the pet trade. But there's so many of them now. They're nesting in Brooklyn. They make huge colonial nests that could be, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 feet tall. The male and female mate for life. There's wonderful nests at Greenwood Cemetery in the Gates, if anybody wants to go see them there. And Beth has beautiful photographs of them in our book.
And one of my producers saw one in Riverside Park. So
yeah.
I guess they're all over the city.
I saw them. I swim at Riverbank State Park on 145th Street, and there's a whole bunch of them spending the summer there.
What happens is somebody gets one, maybe in a pet store. They're very noisy. They're terrible in an apartment. So one day the owner opens the window and the bird flies out. The bird goes someplace and continues being noisy till it meets another noisy friend. And before you know it, there are 2, 3, 4, and you have another community.
There are some birds that actually have become famous in New York, like pale male, which also became the source of a controversy when the building that it was nesting on tried to get rid of his nest.
Oh, yes. I mean, that was pretty traumatic. Fifth Avenue. Pale male was the first hawk in recorded history in this city to build his nest on a human-made building. He's gone through he's with his fifth mate now. They also mate for life. But because of these terrible rodenticides that people put out to kill rats, and we have a terrible rat problem, but there's a certain kind that has coumadin in it, and it takes a long time for the liver to break it down. And then the rats kind of wander around for days, easy pickings for the hawks. The hawks get them. The hawks eat the rat or feed the rat to their babies, and the hawks die too. And so,
but he must be immune.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
it's
or
hard,
just lucky.
Or
maybe
it's hard
to say. He's a Mickey Rooney bird.
He's already at least 22 years old.
Wow.
And maybe his body has the strength to fight
off.
How
long do they live?
Well, usually 18, 19 years in the wild. I mean, he is an amazing bird. And because of pale male, so many people got involved in birding because his story is so wonderful. It touched literally people all over the world.
Now, you mentioned what they eat. I've been told, do not feed breadcrumbs to birds. Why?
There are additives in breadcrumbs, but people feed the birds. It's a part of being
parental. Shouldn't they do bird seed instead
if they really want
to feed the birds?
Would be nice.
I mean, you know, when we lived on the Bow Basin, there were two swans who would show up every winter with their babies, their cygnets, and people were throwing white bread. Now, white bread's really bad for waterfowl. They need to maintain the oil so they can oil their feathers and keep them waterproof. So I would always feed them whole wheat bread. But I think if you're feeding sparrows on the street or pigeons, I think a little bit of bread is not going to hurt them. And, you know, we were talking about this before, about this whole thing about feeding the birds and attracting rats. It's really the garbage that humans leave out that attracts all these rats, and rats have lots of babies. I think feeding the birds is a great thing to do.
What about some of the other hazards that I imagine birds have to face in the city? tall buildings, for example, especially buildings that fit into, are colored to fit into the skyline, or the bright lights of buildings. So do they cause problems for
terrible
birds?
Problems. I mean, New York City Audubon has a Lights Out New York program that Governor Cuomo has signed on to also for all state buildings to dim their lights between 11 p.m. and dawn during migration, spring migration, April through May, and fall migration, I think it's September 1st through November 1st. Many birds migrate at night, and they become confused by the lights, and they crash into the skyscrapers. And so actually, tens of millions of birds die.
Because they can't tell whether a window is a window.
That's right. They see a reflection, and it's a continuation of the real world. Bang, broken neck, dead. Or some birds impact, and their eyes can be knocked into the head, or the retina can be detached.
You mentioned the Audubon Society. The Audubon Society has taken a portion of a park in Greenpoint, McGulrick Park, and planted things that they say will attract migratory birds. Are there certain things that... if you have a backyard that you would want to plant if you want birds to visit?
Sure. I mean, there's many berry-producing trees and shrubs, serviceberry tree, even rose hips. Birds love rose hips, so rose bushes. There are certain trees. There are oak trees that attract insects and butterflies and moths, and many of the migrating warblers will eat the caterpillars. They arrive up here just in time for the caterpillars to hatch out of their eggs.
You said that there's only one variety of hummingbird that lives east of the Mississippi.
The ruby-throat.
So if we see a hummingbird here, it's likely to be a ruby-throat?
Most likely. Once in a while, you'll get a different kind.
Or a rufous.
But do they migrate?
Yes.
Oh, they have to.
And
those little things migrate?
Those little things.
They are more
thousands
powerful.
Thousands of miles.
And they like jewelweed, so... Plant some jewelweed. You'll have hummingbirds.
Cardinal flower.
What about just a hummingbird feeder?
Hummingbird feeders. Yes. They love hummingbird feeders.
Let's take some more calls. Anne from Staten Island. Hi, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. As I'm listening to your informative program, I'm delighting in watching a pair of American goldfinch feasting upside down on the sunflowers in my side yard here on Staten Island. And also you mentioned the wonderful hummingbird. I have seen a hummingbird several times this summer in my side yard. But, however, the red-tailed hawk, as much as it's a beautiful bird, I consider it kind of an enemy of these birds because I had to give up my bird feeder because it was using it as a fast food station.
Yeah, they're serial killers, those red-tailed hawks.
Yeah.
But sunflowers, anything that has seeds like that, I mean, the goldfinches are such beautiful birds, and they'll be so grateful.
Let's take another call. McKenna from Monmouth, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I work at New York Presbyterian Cornell on the east side by the river. And last March or April, I was back on one of the back balconies by the ambulance bay, and I saw a pigeon leg, like a eaten one. And I said to one of the environmental guys standing outside me, like, oh, I wonder, like, what did that? And he said that there's a bald eagle on the building. And he only comes in the winter, and then he leaves in the summer. And he eats the pigeons over the winter.
You know, bald eagles generally will eat fish, and they're also scavengers. We do have bald eagles that have nested in Staten Island for the first time, and we can see them around Inwood, but it's most likely it wasn't a bald eagle if it was eating pigeons. Most likely it was a red-tailed hawk.
So let's talk about pigeons for a moment. Many people think of them as just rats with wings. There are often campaigns to get rid of them. But pigeons, they're okay, aren't they?
Pigeons are wonderful.
They're beautiful.
Yeah, they're beautiful. Look at the best photographs of all the different types of pigeons and the different colors. They are fantastic parents. They produce a crop milk, which is has a lot of protein for their babies.
They produce milk just
they
like mammals?
They produce milk.
Yeah, mother's milk.
It's different from mammalian milk, but it is it's called crop milk. And they are dedicated parents. They've also helped humanity for thousands of years, carrying messages during wars.
Blue jays also can be found all over the city, and it's easy to know that they're there because they make distinctive sounds. But isn't it common to see blue jays attacking other animals, even animals that are bigger than they are?
It's territorial.
It might
be
doing.
They go after hawks. They go.
Yes.
I don't mind if they go after squirrels and raccoons.
Yeah, it's just territorial.
They're just chasing them away from their babies during nesting period.
Probably the most annoying bird sounds are from one of the most beautiful birds, peacock. But they don't walk around wild in the city. You got to go to the zoo to see them.
You got to go to the Bronx Zoo.
But there was a peacock that escaped from the Central Park Zoo and landed on a balcony on Fifth Avenue and stayed for a while.
There are so many gorgeous colors in the photographs that you supply for this book. What are some of the more colorful birds in the area, and how would we spot them?
The redbirds are most spectacular. Of course, the cardinals, the scarlet tanagers, for blue, the indigo bunting.
The orioles.
The orioles. It's the migratory birds that are usually the most spectacularly colored, the many yellow-colored warblers.
Kathy from Nutley, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I don't know a whole lot about birds, but I have a nest that is under the eave of a garage. And I thought about building a bird box or a birdhouse to attach to the garage rather than having this nest under the eave. But when I went online to look at, you know, directions and things, I learned that you had to build the box specifically for each type of bird.
Yeah, there are certain. If a bird is building a nest out in the open under an eave, it's probably not a cavity nester. You know, it could, maybe you have a barn swallow there. You could have a robin there. What, you have never seen the bird?
But I just don't know what kind of bird it is. It looks like a sparrow to me, but, you know, I could be easily wrong.
Could be house sparrow.
It could be. I mean, that's what it seems like,
yeah.
But that's what it's.
Well, they would love to nest in cavities. So if you built it, put a little bird box out. And plus, you never know what you're going to get.
Just one more thing before you go. A number of listeners have wondered about identifying birds through their sounds. Now, you can't obviously supply that in a book. But
that takes
are there
a while.
Ways? Are there ways? Are there records? Or
lots of records. If you go onto the Cornell Lab of Ornithology or allaboutbirds.com, and you put in a bird, it'll tell you what the sound is like. And then as you walk around, you especially in the winter or when there are no leaves on the trees, you hear a bird, you're able to see it, and then you, after a while, you just become used to the sounds. It's like listening to an old friend.
There's also an app that you can get for your iPhone that has bird calls.
Hmm. So that's another way, because a couple of people have called in almost desperate to find out what that bird is that is near them. Just one more thing. We've been talking a lot about the impact of climate change on shellfish and other residents of the area. What about birds? Have we seen them affected as well?
Sure. I mean, loss of habitat, wetlands drying up, wetlands being polluted, areas becoming warmer and or colder, and food supplies dwindling. Sure, it affects them.
And does that mean that they're going to be going to other places?
Yeah,
possible.
But
it's possible.
I would assume it's also attracting some birds to New York who
That's
didn't
right.
come here in the past.
That's right.
Thank you both so much for being on our show. Leslie Day, the author of Field Guide to the Neighborhood Birds of New York City, which is published by Johns Hopkins University Press, and Beth Bergman, who supplied the beautiful photographs here. It's been a great pleasure having both
Thank
of you,
you
on our show today.
Thank you,
and
Anna.
Thanks
Thank
to
you.
All of you who called in. Sorry we couldn't get to more calls.